Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and I'm joined for the second time by someone I admire deeply. Knows the draft pretty well, knows the NHL pretty well, the one and only Craig Button. Thanks so much for taking the time on this little podcast on a pretty couple busy days for you with the NHL draft right ahead of us. How crazy is your world right now? It must be, how do you have time for yourself at all?
It's not as crazy as you would think, and I understand the premise, but when you're looking at what you've been doing all year long, and you watch the NHL games, you watch the young players for the draft, it's more about for me is just watching all of it come together, and there is busy, you got media covering the draft in a significant way, they want to hear from the NHL teams, they want to hear from the prospects. I get to sit back and really watch because I don't have to be involved in that area of it. Certainly I'm interested and certainly I do watch. I mean, what really becomes, I think, I challenge you might not be the right word, but where you're juggling is that, we have our insiders down here in Vegas, and you have trades, you have free agency coming up, you have the draft, who's going to be re-signed, who's not going to be re-signed, so many moving parts. And so they're busy. And then the NHL teams, they all have their availabilities for their media. So we're set up in one place, but you got to be able to get set up in multiple places really quick, traveling with heavy equipment to different hotels and different locales to hear what the teams are saying. So, you got to just kind of be adaptable to that and be ready to do that. And that to me is where, you might be called on short notice and just say, hey, we need you here to do to respond to this trade or to this transaction. And that's where you got to be ready. But I'm not really the one that has to be totally busy because my work is completed. I just get to watch back and just see, okay, what's how's this gonna unfold? Let's see what it looks like. And what's the greatest thing about the draft for me is watching the excitement on the players and the families, friends' faces as the young players do get drafted.
It sounds like for you, it's a little bit of, you've done all the homework, or you've prepared as best as you can. Now it's the test, but you have all the answers almost like that, where you kind of know all these players so well and in and out. And I guess for you, what's it like to come up with that? You had your final rankings, a couple of days ago. What's that process like for you? Is it more just finally kind of putting, punching in, guys into, where and I'm just so curious how that works for you.
So I do two different things. I do a draft list, which is my rankings and projection of the players who I think will be the best players in 3 to 5 years' time. And it would be nice if it was just straight ahead. You go, well, this guy's better than that guy, better than that guy, and it'll just work like that. That's not the reality of it. And so that's the one list, and I'll come back to that in a second. And then I do a mock draft, and the mock draft is completely about fun. And I have very little to no idea how the draft is going to unfold. But here's the big revelation. The NHL teams, for the most part, have very little idea how the draft is going to unfold. Yeah, San Jose knows that they're going to pick one, and Chicago now picking two. They have after that, everybody's got to wait. And as you go deeper down to the first round, like that waiting is going to be, and who you're going to select is going to be predicated on what happened in front of you. So people say, oh, you don't know. Of course I don't know. Like, how could I know? The NHL teams don't even know. How you're expecting me to know? So I put on the GM hat for all the teams picking in the first round, and I get to say, hey, here's who I would pick, and here's why. I don't have any. No, I'm not picking somebody. Like, I'm not saying, oh, I picked this guy in 17th overall because he's rated in the seventh round, but I think he'll be Joe Pavelski. I mean, I'm not doing that because, to me, that's not the exercise. And so I have fun with it and take it from there. But as I go through my list and projecting it's over a course of years. This isn't about who I saw play good, who didn't play so well. You're watching these players over a long period of time. And with that, you're watching their progression. You're watching, excuse me, I don't know where that came from,
All good.
but you're watching the progression over a long period of time. And that progression begins in a lot of cases when they're 15, 16 years of age. And now they get to their draft year and they're 18. So you've had a lot of opportunity to watch them grow, to watch them develop. A lot of players aren't capable of showing what they have earlier on when they're 16, 17, even into their draft year. That's why you got to keep watching and you got to keep evaluating. Okay, well, that player's able to do more. Why is he able? Why he's matured. He's a little bit stronger now. He's a little bit quicker. You're always looking for those skills. And I don't get fussed about making a list in September or November or January or March. And like if people are, I'm trying to work to an end. And when I get to my end list, it's like, okay, here's the point where I'm at right today. I'm confident in saying, okay, these are the players that I think fit here. We put numbers beside them. I mean, is there, you can look at my list and I think there's seven players that could be number three on my list. Like, I can't put a three beside all seven of them, but I know that. So, you put somebody at three and you put somebody at four and you put somebody at five, but Alex, you could look at it and go, well, I think the guy you have seven should be three. I wouldn't argue with you on that. I mean, they're good players. They're different types of players or different positions, but I'm trying to get to that point right prior to the draft. I go, okay, here's my list. Here's where I'm comfortable at. And the beautiful thing about this is everybody has a different opinion. I've said this about the 32 NHL teams, and I can say this with 100% certainty. All 32 teams' top 10 lists are different. They're not the same. You will not find the same list amongst the 32 in the top 10. So now go to top 20. Good luck. Just the top 10, they won't be the same. And now what you do is you look and after the draft, opportunity presents itself again. You're watching players in international tournaments. You're watching players, and you get to evaluate. You only get to pick one player for the most part. Every team, I know there's multiple picks at different points, but now you get to watch the players and go, okay, geez, that player might be better than I thought. Oh, geez, maybe that player's not as good as I thought. So the scouting process is continuing on because now what it comes is you're checking your own work. Yes, everybody knows team. Let's just say Ottawa's picked this player. Everybody, oh, well, geez. But Ottawa had a lot of considerations that they were looking at with their picks. And so now they can look at it and go, okay, you like your player, you celebrate the player you drafted, but you're also going, okay, did we have that player a little bit higher? Should have we had that player a little bit higher? Should it be been in consideration? And we're all going to know where players should have gone in 3 to 5 years' time. Nobody has to do a redraft in 5 years' time and go, this is how the 2024 draft should have gone. We'll know. Everybody knows. And it's also part of the ongoing scouting process and evaluation process, because the bottom line is they're 18-year-old kids.
Exactly. I guess for you, you're kind of alluding to it. Is that something where you look back at the past and say, you know, I had this guy way too high or way too low, and then you see players that come in that might be comparable, or is it more just, you know, new draft, new, you know, blank slate? Like, how do you maybe use the past to maybe shape how you see players going forward, or is it more of an art in a sense? It's definitely not a pure science, that's for sure, but is, I'm just kind of curious what your perspective is on that, Craig.
So you asked, I know players were asked, if you're an animal, what animal would you be? So based on when you asked me about art, I'm gonna ask myself the question, what artist would I be if it is an art? I would be Da Vinci. I would want to be Da Vinci. I know Picasso had great stuff. Monet had great stuff. You have all the, but I would want to be Leonardo da Vinci. That's
There.
who I would like to be. Anyway, when it's an art, I'll tell you a quick story, and I laugh about it all the time. In 1995, I was with Dallas, and we drafted Jerome Iginla 11th overall. He was rated 26 by NHL Central Scouting. And when we drafted him 11th, there was a lot of eyebrows raised, and geez, they really stepped up for Jerome Iginla. Frank Bonello, who just passed away, he was running Central Scouting, a great person. And he came over and he asked, we talked about it after. He goes, what? And I told him, here's where we're at, because he was evaluating his own ranking. Like they rated him 26, we took him 11. He wanted to know, why were it's too easy to just say, oh, well, geez, what did Central Scouting know? Well, Central Scouting could have looked at us and go, what do they know? Right, but you have the conversation. He wanted to understand what we saw, that we were confident in drafting him 11th, and you have that conversation. So here's how we projected Jerome Iginla. We projected him as a 30, maybe a 35 goal scorer, power winger, really good, solid player in the NHL. How wrong were we? he was a superstar. He was the best player coming out of that draft. I mean, Hall of Famer. I think it's 18 players that have scored 600 goals or more in the NHL. He's one of 18. You talk about under projecting. We made a big mistake, and at the same time, you laugh about it because you knew you had a good player and everything. And we joke. So now it comes to Teach. And his son Tej is a player that I really think highly of. And I've made this comment a number of times now, and I'll make it again. I go back and I have my scouting notes on Jerome, and they're different players. And we're 29 years separated between Jerome being drafted 11th overall and where Tej is going to go. So there's a lot of changes in the game, and certainly the way Tej plays the game is somewhat different than Jerome. But they're not different in this regard. They're exceptionally smart. They're exceptionally competitive. They have offensive skill. They want to make a difference in the game. And as I kept looking back at the notes we had on Jerome, there wasn't a lot of flash and dash there, just like there isn't with Tej. And I said, "Am I going to make the same mistake I made on Jerome and underestimate him?" So I said, "No, nope. I'm not underestimating." So there's your answer to looking at the past. And you're always looking to how you evaluated players. Are there similarities? How a player's projected and ultimately turned out? You're drafting the players that are the best players at the levels below the NHL. You're not drafting a 5-goal scorer and thinking he'll score 50. You're drafting 50-goal scorers, hoping they'll score 30. And that's part of the process. That's part of the projection. You're always taking in, okay, what have I learned from the past? What have I learned from going? But you also got to be careful because that can cut both ways. If I look and go, geez, Alex Adams reminds me of Jerome Iginla, right? Okay, well that's great. I go, good. So I might be more bullish. But if there's a player that you remind me of that didn't turn out, that doesn't mean you won't turn out, but it's something that you gotta balance out. And that's what staffs do in terms of working. What about this? What about that? And so you're always using the past, but the biggest thing you have to be able to do is ensure that the players you're evaluating have the requisite skills to play in the NHL. Because you can't play in the NHL and can't do it successfully unless you have those skills. There'll be different values that teams put on different skill elements, but you need those skill elements and you need to have them in abundance to be able to play in the NHL level. Then you got to work with players. A lot of times, you hear, oh, that player didn't make it or that player failed. A lot of players get failed. I'll go back to Gilbert Brulé. Gilbert Brulé was a really good player, a competitive player, but they put him right in the NHL. He wasn't ready for the physical rigors. He ended up getting hurt, shoulder injuries, back, chest injuries, right? So now you're trying to develop as a player and you're rehabbing all these injuries. He got so far behind, and then they gave up on him, and then he's trying to find his way. And I don't know, do I believe that Gilbert could have made it handled differently? Yeah, I do. But we do don't. So you got to be careful in terms of how you evaluate players that have been drafted in the past, and what was their scenario, and what can we learn from that in terms of the development? Because development is a huge part of this. You can have great scouting staffs, but if you don't develop them properly, it's not going to work. And you can have great development staffs, and if you don't have good scouting staffs, it's not going to work. They go hand in hand, and you have to ensure that those things are symbiotic. And so there's a lot of factors that go into players having success or having more success and being patient with the process. But you're looking at and the other thing I would say is, there's going to be players that on any given night are not going to be at their best. And if you showed up to watch a game and they weren't at their best, but you have a really good dossier on them, don't be thinking about good game, the bad stretch, good stretch. Players are going to have really good stretches. They're going to have some games and stretches where they aren't so good. Cole Perfetti, in his draft year, he came out of the gate, and I think he had like 2 goals in his first 11 games. But Dave Drinkle, who's still the current manager in Saginaw, he'd hit like I think he'd hit like 18 bars. I think he hit 4 crossbars and 14 posts. So, yeah, I know the numbers say he's not scoring. Connor Bedard in his first 2 years in his draft year, I think he had 23 shots in his first 2 games and didn't have a goal. And I got, what's wrong with Connor Bedard? I was at those 2 games. I go, absolutely nothing. Like, absolutely nothing. Trust me, there's absolutely nothing wrong with him. He is on fire. Don't, but you look at the stat sheet, you go to a game where a guy played good, or you're going to a game excited, he didn't play so good. You got to balance it out over time, and you got to be really measured in your evaluations over time.
I guess with that, I'll go to the draft itself and some of the players. And you mentioned Tej, again, of course, but maybe just talk about Celebrini. He's been the consensus number one all year. What do you kind of see his potential as? If you talk about sometimes a guy, you see him as maybe a 50 goal scorer, might be a 30, but what do you see his kind of potential as, and maybe an NHL comparable as well?
Well, my comparable for him is Jonathan Toews. It could be Sasha Barkov. You know, that blend of player, and the word that comes to mind when I talk about Macklin is complete. And he was the best player in the USHL as a 16-year-old. He's the best player in the NCAA as a 17-year-old. He's got tremendous abilities in every single area of the game. He impacts the game tremendously in all those areas. He makes others around him better. He makes teams better. And like Toews and Barkov, they help you win. They help you achieve the ultimate goals. And I don't have any doubt that that's where Macklin is headed. And the San Jose Sharks have a massive difference maker in them. You know, at times I'd look at him and it's easy to say, oh, maybe he's only a 40 goal scorer. You know, I think when you watch Macklin play, to put a ceiling on him, I think would be a mistake. You're looking at an elite number one center, an elite number one center. There was a time when Sidney Crosby coming into the NHL, oh, he'll never score 50. Well, he scored 50. Like, you know, so I always think with great players and players of that ilk, don't put limits on them. You know, be realistic. Like, you know, if somebody came out and said, well, Macklin, can he score 70? No, I don't think so. Like he did. Like Auston Matthews, who's the best goal scorer in the National Hockey League, you know, people, oh, can he score 70? Well, he's shown that he can come right up to it and do it, right? But 4 years ago, you weren't going to say he could score 70. There's no way. And he's the best goal scorer in the league. So I think you always have to be careful in what it is. But at the same time, you know, a number one elite center that can impact the game in every single area. There's very few of those in the NHL. And that's what I think Macklin can be. If we want to talk about goals and points and everything, I mean, would I say he can't score 50? I'd be foolish to say he can't. Do I think he will on a regular basis? I think that that's a lot to expect. But I do know that he's going to be an impactful player in so many different regards.
You had Demidov, pretty high. I think he's two on your list, and I heard you compare him to Kucherov, which raised my ears, and saying better than Michkov, who had a lot of hype last year, of course. Just maybe talk about him and why you see him as that just elite player in this league.
Like Kucherov, he's got 360 degree awareness. When the puck is on Demidov's stick, he knows he's got five options, and he knows what best option is, second best. He's like a quarterback sitting in the pocket. He goes, okay, what's my number one option? What's my check down two? What's my check down three? And then you're going to make the play. That's Demidov. That's Kucherov. And so, you know, how do you defend against that? When you have somebody that's so gifted from a skill point of view, the hands, the ability to thread the needle, and he can score goals too, now you don't have to just defend him. You have to defend all the options that are in front of him. That becomes an absolute nightmare. It's rare. There's very few players like that in the National Hockey League. And and like again, like I think that Macklin's number one, and for me, Demidov's number two, clear cut. I think there's a line under Celebrini, and I think there's a line under Demidov. Does that mean the Chicago Blackhawks draft somebody different? It's a bad pick? No, not at all. I would not, because there's good players that not named Demidov. But I look at Connor Bedard and I look at Demidov and I just go, wow, that would be a nightmare for teams. And like Kucherov, he's a massive difference maker. And I don't know where you find difference makers like that. And you can, I say this all the time, Alex, you can find every reason you want to not draft the player. Find reasons to draft players and not, no team in all my years, I've watched thousands of players get drafted. I have never heard an NHL team stand up after they drafted a player or talk about after they drafted and say, yeah, well, he doesn't skate very well. His defensive play isn't very good. His passing is subpar. They're always celebrating what a player does in his strengths. And I think that that's what you know, don't listen. Every Russian player's come over and play. Like the Russian stuff is garbage. It's just complete crap. If you want to pin it on a passport, go ahead. You're just going to be making a mistake. Evaluate the players and go from there. Demidov to me is elite. He's an elite mercurial talent, like Kucherov.
After those two, and there's obviously other great forwards in this draft, but there's this plethora of defensemen. I'm curious just to hear your opinion on whether, like, what would you do as a team that needs a defenseman, and obviously you have your list, but also just when there's so many defensemen of different ilks and players that shoot right, left, like how much is fit versus maybe just the best talent on the board? Kind of what would you do as maybe a GM? Is it just straight off the board, or let's say some guy drops? Like, I'm just kind of curious with so many defenders that might go in that 4, 3 to 10 range.
Best player. I mean, that's all going to be subjective to each team's own analysis and their own evaluations. And it would be easy if everybody said, okay, defenseman one, this is your best defenseman, this is the second best, and you just tick down the list. It doesn't work like that. So if we look at the six defenders, and I'm going to keep Adam Juracek out of this just because he had the serious knee injury. I do believe that if he was healthy, he'd be fully in the conversation with the other six. And who are the other six? The six are Lyushkov, Boyum, Parekh, Dickinson, Salaev, and Yakimchuk. So I'd like to tell you that they're all the same. Unfortunately, for everybody, they're all different players. And they're all good players, and they're all going to be really good long-term NHL defensemen for the teams that get them. But Zane Parekh is an offensive wizard. Sam Dickinson is just an all-round play it any way you want type defender. Lyushkov has that poise and understanding, a calm playing the game. Yakimchuk has the big shot, really good offensively. Salaev, 6'7", skates like the wind, territorial, aggressive. Boyum, left defense, right defense, is a left shot defender, great skater, can play anywhere you want. They're all different. Like, if you want an offensive defenseman and you go, listen, our priority is offensive defenseman, well, Zane Parekh stands out, like is the best. And if you want to take that, well, then Carter Yakimchuk is probably the second best. If you're going like, well, we want a really good, balanced two-way defenseman, well, now you're looking at Zee Boyan, you're looking at Sam Dickinson, you're looking at Artem Lyushkov. And I don't think you can sit down and say, well, geez, that guy's better than that guy's better than that guy. It all comes down to preference, and it all comes down to what do we have in our organization as well? I will remind everybody that's going to tap into this interview and to you specifically, best player available is a garbage argument. Because best player available is different for every single team. I just said that the 32 teams will have a top 10 list that's not completely different, but that's different than every other team. So it won't be the same. So, oh, just take best. Well, who's best player available then? Just tell me who it is. Because there's no order of things that say that's you're not right. It's not like the 100 meters in the Olympics where you go, okay, here's the top eight finishers, one, two, three, four. We know who was won gold. We know what. It's not like that. That best player available argument is a garbage argument because it doesn't work. It doesn't apply. Every team has a different best player available at any point in the draft. Well, maybe not at one. They have a different best player available. So it's not easy. But what you have to do is evaluate the players, understand what you're looking to get, understand what each player offers, and then you got to put a stake in the ground. It's not that you don't like the other players. You got to put a stake in the ground. And then you better celebrate that player and help him be the best he can be. Because that's ultimately back to the development equation of what you have to do.
I guess, the reason why I asked that is, and it segues well, is just to the Habs at the fifth overall pick, and they had the fifth overall pick last year. And I don't know what Kent Hughes was thinking about when he made that selection, but some people felt it's like they wanted that defenseman maybe over a forward. So I guess just even now, transitioning to the Habs a little bit, what do you think would be the best player that you think might be available for them that kind of fits that building rebuild there in Montreal?
Let me go back to the David Reinbacher selection. And David's a really good defender. And I think that he'll have a good solid NHL career. Do I think he'll be a star? No, but I don't think you always have to, like, it'd be nice if everybody turned out to be a star. There's not going to be a multitude of stars drafted in any NHL draft. And you got to, again, I go back to what are you looking for, and what do you value, and there's opportunities in different parts of the draft. I'll go back to the 2022 draft. There was, Shane Wright was in that draft, and there was a lot of talk about Shane, but Slafkovský and Shane Wright, Logan Cooley, you could say that they were in the mix, right? And the Montreal Canadiens, and everybody could look at it and go, okay, Shane Wright seems to be the fit or whatnot, but they draft Slafkovský. The minute they announced the trade for Kirby Dach, you're kind of going, oh, that makes sense now why they take Slafkovský and not Shane Wright. And then they draft Owen Beck with the first pick in the second round. Now it all lines up. Like, what were they going to do? Draft another center, like another right shot? They had Suzuki. They trade for Dach. They draft Owen Beck. So that would have left them with four right shot centers. You got to build out your team. And Slafkovský's been excellent. Like, he's really developed nicely and everything. So you also have to understand that one pick isn't the end all and the be all. It's what you're trying to do vis-a-vis other things that you're working on that other people may not know. But the minute that happened, you go, okay, there it all is. It all fits now. So I'll go back to Reinbacher. There was a lot of, oh, you got to draft Michkov, you got to draft Michkov. Okay, great. Let's think. So I was asked after they drafted David Reinbacher, what do I thought? Here's what I thought about the player. They said, well, you didn't have him rated that high. I said, who says I'm right? Like, what, just as I rated him there, that means I'm right? No, it doesn't mean anything. And the Montreal Canadiens are the ones that have to make the pick, and they're the ones that have to feel confident in the pick. And like I said, celebrate it. If you start listening to everybody outside your organization, you're going to be outside the organization before long. You better do what you think is best, and you're going to be judged on it. David Reinbacher is a really good player. So now we get to five, right? And Montreal is going to have a lot of really good options. So we look at number one. We know that Mackenzie Celebrini is not in, like, Montreal will not be having him on the board at number five. So who's going to be there at five for them? Three players are going to be off the board. Three players are going to be off the board. And trust me, Montreal doesn't know who they are. They don't know who it is yet. Okay. They might know two are. They might know they, but they don't know all three that are going to be off the board. They do not know who they're going to be. So you have to have a group of players that you're going to be looking at. So could it be Demidov if he's there? Certainly. Could it be Caden Lidstrom if he's there? Certainly. Could it be TJ Ginla? I would have to say certainly. Could it be another defender? Certainly it could be. They're going to have the fifth pick. Four players are off the board at that, and they're going to have to make a decision between or already made a decision between a couple of players, because there's going to be a couple of play like there'll be probably two players that they've discussed really hard, and you're going to see who they like, and they'll take that player. And they might not ever tell you who the other guy was in consideration or who they had rated high or whatnot, but that's the reality of where they're at. And I don't think that, again, I think their prospect pool, the cupboard is stocked, the shelves are well stocked at every position. They have different types of players. Are all these prospects going to play for the Montreal Canadiens? Absolutely not. They can't. It's impossible. So what you're trying to do is add, I talk about difference makers. You're trying to add players that can make a, like, when you're picking five and you're picking in that top part of the draft, if you can get players, and I feel strongly about this, they can be top three defensemen, a number one goaltender, or a top six, like a top two line forward that can really impact the game offensively in different ways, then that's where you got to go there. There's a lot of players that can play in other areas on your team. Carey Price went fifth overall. And there was consternation about that. How could they drop? Well, they projected him as the number one goaltender. He's a Hall of Fame goaltender. So that's a pretty bloody good pick at number five. So what I'm saying is for Montreal, they're going to have that opportunity to get, in my view, a top line forward or a top pair defenseman. I don't think there's any question about it. So what I would ask you, Alex, how many top line forwards do they have, and how many top pair defensemen do they have? So people say, well, they won't draft a defenseman. Well, why not? Like, can you ever not have a lot of good defensemen?
I doing that, you think of Caulfield, Suzuki, Slafkovsky, hopefully Rhinebacker, and then it gets a bit, the cupboard gets dry, as you say. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do there. I guess I want to transition to Tejas Ginla and the Flames, and you were, the former GM of the Flames. Obviously, your brother works for them as well as a, in just what do you think of that maybe storyline and knowing Ginla is a little bit as well. Just is that the right move if he were to go there, and with the spotlight, do you think he'd be okay with it? And are you is a part of you kind of cheering for that to happen as well?
It's a great storyline. I mean, it's an unbelievable storyline. There's two iconic figures in the history of the Calgary Flames, Lanny McDonald and Jerome Iginla. They were and remain the faces of the Calgary Flames. I mean, players, great captains, great people in the community. And when you think about great Calgary Flames, they were all of that and more. And so keep that in mind. So the storyline of having Jerome Iginla's son come and play for the Calgary Flames, I mean, how phenomenal a storyline would that be? I always think you have to be looking at, like, if you think he's the best player, then and that's the guy you think fits, then draft him. But in the case of Teej, it's not quite so simple, because it's not so much about Teej not embracing it, and then I'll get to the calculation on the decision. It's how people outside that are going to be watching Teej perceive him. Oh, he's not his dad. Well, he's, of course he's not his dad. And what kind and how do you deal with that? And what kind of pressures does that put up? Because you don't know how Teej is going to deal with that. Like, Teej is a wonderful young man, and he's got all the personality, and he's well adjusted. His parents, Jerome and Kara, are just great people. And so I'm not worried about it that. It's the outside perceptions. And then how do you deal with that? And you're not, nobody will know how he'll deal with that until you put him into that environment. So you just got to ask yourself that question, number one. Number two, and this is where the calculation on the pick goes. So you're the Calgary Flames. So, like, okay, like, there's obviously massive PR in drafting Jerome Iginla's son, and he's a really good player. So if you start to think, well, geez, it's not, we don't think it's the right thing, or we want to not expose Teej to that type of scrutiny or whatever. Well, you're kind of in that damned if you do and damned if you don't spot. Because if you do, you might be looking at, and then if you don't, you might be, well, how could they not draft Jerome? And then now you're looking at the PR on that side of things. So the Calgary, I don't think it's as simple as saying that, okay, you do or you don't. I just think these are the considerations that are in place for the Calgary Flames. I will say this about the Calgary Flames. I think that much like I, not much, exactly how I say about any other player being drafted, if your decision is Teej Iginla, then the bottom line is put a stake in the ground and celebrate it. And then make sure you develop it along the right way, and make sure your messaging is really clear. That's what, but if you're going to start to, well, we didn't draft him because we don't want to do this, right? Like, just make sure your messaging is very clear in terms of of what path you're going to take. But if you do take him, celebrate it. Celebrate it, and celebrate it for the player, not for the PR content. The PR is the secondary part of this. The player is the one you celebrate.
I want to, take a bit of time and maybe see if you want to celebrate Steve Staios and the job he did with, acquiring Linus Allmark. And I want to just go through a couple Canadian teams before I let you go.
Sure.
Just what do you think of that trade? Obviously losing some draft capital, but also, getting a former Vezina winner just 2 years ago when he won the award. Does it make sense to you when you look? Take a step back, and he wasn't extended, but that might happen. Just what are your initial thoughts?
There's one year that matters for the Ottawa Senators, and it's the 24-25 season. And if you don't get focused in on this season and the importance of this season, I don't care about 25-26 right now. Getting them extended isn't my focus right now. Getting a goaltender on my team that can move our team forward. They had the worst goaltender in the National Hockey League last year, bar none. So Steve Staios, right, again, I hear people say it all the time. Well, it's not easy. Yeah, well, when you recognize your problem, you better find the solution. That's the manager's job. It's not the, don't tell me how hard it is. If it's so hard, I'll get somebody else to do the job. Steve Steos isn't afraid of hard work. He's not afraid. He found the solution to the biggest problem, to the second biggest problem, to the third biggest problem that the Ottawa Senators have, which was goaltending. And he addressed it. And that is a significant step forward. Don't worry about the extension. Draft capital. What did you give up? You gave up nothing. Their draft capital is Tim Stützle, Brady Tkachuk, Jacob Chychrun, not Jacob Chychrun, Thomas Chabot, Jake Sanderson. That's their draft capital. What are you going to do to help those guys? Because I'll tell you what, if they don't win this year, there's players that are going, I'm not so sure I want to be in Ottawa. And it ain't because it's a Canadian market. It's because they're not seeing a chance to win. That's the bottom line. Steve Staios addressed their biggest problems, and he addressed it in a meaningful way. What he didn't give up anything. He gained massively in this trade. And sure, the Boston Bruins, opportunity presented itself, and he was able to take advantage. Big kudos to Steve Staios. Because that, I can guarantee you this, Alex, every single player on that Ottawa Senators team is going, yeah, we got a goalie. Yeah, let's go. They're excited. Bottom line is, if your players aren't excited about a chance to win, you haven't done your job as a manager.
Well, I need to take that enthusiasm when I cover them next year and see it like, yeah, let's go, that I'm covering the Sens. So I'm gonna take that, and hopefully, and I think you're right about Allmark, that they got the goalie that they've been desperately needing since Craig Anderson's departure. Obviously, Leafs land is always an interesting world, and you live in it a fair bit on TSN. Just what do you make of maybe the Mitch Marner situation, and him maybe being traded, maybe not, maybe extension, and maybe the outlook of the Leafs with him as a part of the future, or maybe not?
You're too young to remember this, Alex. You weren't even born. You weren't. I know you weren't.
Yeah.
Larry Murphy, Jamie McCowan, and Dave Ellett were all playing for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Team was terrible. And, you know, we were looking, we were scouting, we were looking at players. Literally, they were trying to run Larry Murphy, Dave Ellett, and Jamie McCowan out of Toronto. Larry Murphy went and won two Stanley Cups with Detroit. Dave Ellett went to Winnipeg and was outstanding. And Jamie McCowan went to Detroit and won a was part of winning again. So you want to run players out of town? Really easy to do. And if you start listening to the fans, you're making a huge mistake. So Mitch Marner now has become a lightning rod for everything that's gone wrong. He's not a problem with the Toronto Maple Leafs. The problem with the Toronto Maple Leafs is they did not build their team properly. And that's not on Brad Treliving. That was Kyle Dubas. Kyle Dubas failed spectacularly with what he had. Great to have a plan. Guess what? Your plan didn't work. And you failed spectacularly when you have Matthews and Marner and Nylander and Morgan Riley. You failed spectacularly because it's years lost and gone. So now everybody's going to blame Mitch Marner. If you want to go trade Mitch Marner and get the cap space, great. You're getting cap space. That's all you're getting. First team All-Star twice, Selke Trophy winner, elite player. The problem is not Mitch Marner. The problem is their team has not been constructed with an opportunity to compete in the playoffs when it matters most. And until that changes, you can blame whoever you want. But the bottom line is, if you want to run Mitch Marner out of Toronto, you can easily do it. He's not the problem.
What would you say to fans that just kind of look to his playoff performances? I guess that's my
Which one? The last one? Okay, yeah. He's been a pretty good playoff performer if you go and look at the numbers. Yeah. Yeah. And if you go and look at what he's done. So again, so a player has an off playoff, and that's a reason to get rid of him. Go ask the Buffalo Sabres. Let me just see. Ryan O'Reilly hated losing. They traded him. Oh, Stanley Cup. Jack Eichel hated losing. Oh, they traded him. Stanley Cup. Sam Reinhart, Brandon Montour. Like, give me a break. Like, you know, the Buffalo Sabres organization should be getting Stanley Cup rings for all the Stanley Cups they've delivered. So if the Toronto Maple Leafs, the players have been failed by the previous manager, and they drafted poorly too.
I want to go from that to a bit of ray of sunshine with a bit of, you know, I guess, sadness and despair with the Oilers Cup run. And I just want to end off with that, because you said something that I just is etched in my mind, and about Connor McDavid, and you said greatness orbits around the planets very differently. And I just keep thinking about how good he was. And obviously he won the Conn Smythe, and they were a goal away from, or I guess two goals away from winning the Stanley Cup. How close do you think this Oilers team is to winning the cup? Is it just inevitable? I think you said that. Is McDavid like the best player you've ever watched, Craig? I know that's a big leap, but I'm just curious to hear your take after being in the league and watching the NHL for so long.
So I think, to say it's inevitable, I think is might be a little bit of hyperbole. I do I believe it? Yeah, I do believe that he'll win a Stanley Cup because I think he's that good. That's not the only reason, because you don't do it just by yourself. And I watched the Edmonton Oilers, and when Chris Knobloch and Paul Coffey came into the team, they became a team. They became a team. And I'll take you back to 1998. Our team in Dallas won the President's Trophy, and we lost Joe Nieuwendyk in the first game of the playoffs to a season-ending knee injury. And we went all the way to the conference final, game six, before losing to Detroit. And we were a good team. But you lose, you were in Joe Louis Arena, game's over. The only sound you hear are the light bulbs in the coach's office. It's just quiet. The season's over. And it seemed like it was hours. Finally, Doug Jarvis, our assistant coach, four-time Stanley Cup champion with the Montreal Canadiens, spoke up and he said, "We have a team here. We have a team that plays hard. We have a team that plays together. We have a team that doesn't back down from the competitive challenges. We have a team here." And we got into a really good discussion. We said, "Yeah, we do." That's what the Edmonton Oilers, that's what I see with the Edmonton Oilers. I see that they have a team. That they have a team that coalesced around one another, that competes, that stands up to the challenges. Listen, you look at where they came from in November, all the way, and then they did it again, down 3-0 in the Stanley Cup final. They did it again. They fell one win short, but they're a team. And I see a team there. I watched it develop, I watched it progress, and I certainly feel that they are built and that they have a team that can win. I believe that. Is it inevitable? Nothing's inevitable. We look at things, but when I see those very similar type, I see the similarities in Edmonton that Doug Jarvis saw in our team after we lost, and I think there's a reason. Now, when it comes to Connor McDavid, there's been so many great players in the game. Connor McDavid is by far the, maybe not, but he's clearly the best player on the planet. There's no questioning that. And when you think about the progression of the game and you think about all the greats that have played, how can you diminish Wayne Gretzky? How can you diminish Bobby Orr? How can you diminish Mario Lemieux? Gordie Howe. I mean, he comes, Sidney Crosby's been a great player in the game. And certainly you say that. He has moved himself amongst the greats in the game. He's not on the cusp of joining them. He has joined them. And we'll always have these great debates. Is he the best ever? Well, he's got to be the best ever because he's playing today and the game has progressed. The speed has progressed, the skill has progressed. And I'm more playing off of Wayne Gretzky's comments where he says, "I couldn't play today. Oh no, like these guys are way better than I was." And what, Wayne, we know Wayne in his era was the best. Mario was the best. But where we're at today, but in 20 years' time, there's going to be another player that's going to come along that's going to be great. It might be 10 years' time, who knows? But Connor McDavid is in a category of greatness that has very few persons in the room. Very few persons in the room. And when you enter that room, I mean, it's like welcome. It's welcome because as I used that line the other night on Jay Onright's show, greatness does orbit amongst the planets very differently.
Yeah, and it feels like this was his coming out party, I guess. Everyone knows how
I
good,
agree.
just to do it and win the Conn Smythe, the first time in about 20 years where a player who lost the Cup Finals wins the Conn Smythe.
And only the second skater.
Oh, really? All right.
Reggie Leach in 1976 was the only skater. It was goaltenders that had won it previously. He's the only skater. He's only the second skater to win it. And after game five, it became clear who the Conn Smythe trophy winner was. There was no other choice. It was done and finished and complete. But you watch him play, and it's just, I said this back when he was playing junior hockey, And I said, go and watch him play. It's going to cost you about $25 to go watch a great player play. He's going to be a star in the NHL. He's going to be a superstar in the NHL. And it's going to cost you a lot more money to watch him in the NHL. So you may as well go and watch him now.
I remember as a teen and everyone was clamoring for McDavid tickets with the Erie Otters whenever they're in Ottawa. So you were right, Craig. And it was pretty cool to see where he's come. And I just want to thank you again so much for taking the time and doing this, especially with, I know you're a busy man all the time, but especially now with the draft, which might be your mini Super Bowl of scent of sorts. With all the draft coverage you do. So thank you so much for taking the time. And if there's anything you want to plug for TSN or anything coming out, feel free to share as well.
It's a no, I don't. TSN does a good enough job plugging for themselves. I mean, we're part of hockey, and we get to talk about hockey, and we get to be part of the game in different ways. And you asking me to come on, you're passionate about what you do, so I'm always happy to join you and talk about hockey. You're dedicated, and I mean, you're on along a path where you want to grow and have a bigger stake in the game. So I would just encourage you to keep doing what you do and keep loving what you do. And hockey's a great game, and certainly, we see the Stanley Cup handed out, and now everybody gets to reset. We got the draft, and everybody's excited. Then we got free agency and trades, and the season will be in front of us before long. So it's just great to enjoy all that and to be part of it. And certainly, I thank you for asking me to be part of your show.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Craig. And I hope once July 8th hits, you get some rest or whenever free agency calms down. And thanks so much for taking the time.
Yeah, you're welcome.